Hello and welcome to Baseball Barbacast, the only baseball podcast in the world that would also take $350 million to live in San Diego, California. Jordan, I'll do it if they want me to.
If you insist, I will take your bucket of money, Peter Seidler. Yes, we will be spending this, a good chunk of this episode of Baseball Barbacast, talking about the Manny Machado extension in San Diego. We are going to do our early takeaways from our new rules era of baseball. Of course, the pitch clock is both all the rage in both a good and bad way for some fans so far. We're going to talk about Ollie Marmol versus CB Buckner and a few other fun things at the end. Jake, we are, as we recorded last week, we are still in the same place, at least for another 8 hours or so. It is late on Sunday evening, but it is very late. It's much later than we should be recording this, but we're in the same place, and I'm still going to enjoy recording a podcast in the same place with you.
There is a baby across the hall from us that is crying and is awake at midnight, and so we're good.
Yes, right, because I was like, we're being too loud. Nope, baby's crying. We're good. Sorry. So shouts out to the baby for sponsoring this podcast.
If you're staying in room 108 or 104 of the Spring Hill Suites in Round Rock, Texas, and you have complaints about how loud we're recording, please send an email to baseballbarbacast@gmail.com.
Yes, B-A-R-B-cast. You can reach us there.
or the front desk.
We are very thankful that Manny Machado decided to sign a monumental extension to give us a good chunk of stuff to talk about here at the top of the show. I know spring training has begun for all 30 teams. But to be honest, because we have been covering college baseball, a college baseball tournament in Texas, we have not watched that much Major League Baseball over the last few days since it's begun. We will return to our respective homes and kind of catch up on some highlights. But this is very, very, very significant news for a lot of reasons.
Well, I was going to say, in regards to our spring training intake, our first start has just been pushed back.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. Which, you know. Call us Jacob DeGrom. He just threw a second consecutive bullpen with no trouble.
Wow, Cal Ripken.
Shouts out to Jake. He is the real Iron Man. What a hero. So we will begin with and talk about this Manny Machado extension. So this means a lot of different things. So let's start with the basics.
The
basics. Oh my God. 11 years. $350 million.
With that, Manny Machado should be able to afford the basics.
and much more. 11 years, $350 million. Now, he had 6 years and $180 million left on the deal that he, of course, originally signed with the San Diego Padres several years back. And what was it? Less than a week ago, Machado was like, hey, so I'm going to be opting out of that. He had an opt-out coming up after the end of the season. And that was, I think some people in most situations would take that as a, is he not happy here? But it was the most sensible thing in the world. It was maybe a little bit unsettling. It's not the right word, but a little bit uncommon to see a player be like, oh yeah, fucking duh, I'm out of here. Like not necessarily out of here, but like, yeah, I'm opting out of this contract because there are so few other free agent hitters on the contract this year. The market that we just saw was absolutely crazy in a positive way for players. And not that he didn't want to be in San Diego, but he was like, yeah, I deserve, I'm still one of the best players in baseball.
And he had the leverage of knowing that the Padres have been spending oodles of money.
Exactly. And so it was kind of the perfect storm of just like, he was like, I can play this card. I know they want me here. I want to be here too. So it's not like I'm going to be completely impossible to work with, but I also know how good I am and how important I am.
Well, you make a good point there because he set a deadline. Right. He was like, my deadline is the first day of games. And then that passed and there was no extension. Reporters were like, hey, the deadline passed. And he was like, well, you know, deadlines, like you can turn stuff in after the deadline. Right. Like, it's okay.
Right. But I mean, right. Extension deadlines, we hear this with a lot of, obviously, you know, a year ago, we saw it with Judge.
Well, that's what I was going to say.
Anywhere close.
Right. Like last year with Judge, when he was like, we're not talking about this anymore. He meant it. And there was something to repair.
Yes. Now, at that point, though, remember that all, now I know this was all pushed back and it was condensed because of the lockout, but all of that discourse happened literally opening day. wasn't it?
I was there.
Yeah, you were there, right? So like that all and all that leaking of the Yankees official offer, whatever, was literally opening day. Now, the difference here is they still had another month to kind of hammer this out. And what is fascinating to me is in the reports from Jeff Passan and others is that they previously, like recently offered, they had obviously already been talking about this. It's not like it was news to them that Machado was going to opt out, right? And previously they had offered, like very recently they had offered a deal on top of this that would have ended up being 11 years, $285 million, which is a far cry from the $350 he ended up getting. But that's the kind of, this is brings us to the next important topic. And we're going to talk about Machado the player in a second, but the Padres, man. I mean, like we've seen this now over and over. And like, I mean, Peter Seiler's just doing basically what Steve Cohen's doing, except with less money from what we know, but it doesn't matter. And it's amazing. And honestly, in almost a different way, and honestly, in an even more incredible way than Steve Cohen, right? Because of course, Peter Seiler is rich and he can afford this. And whoever is helping support these extreme financial ventures and pushing their payroll up is amazing. But the fact is he is not one of the 80 richest people in the world the way Steve Cohen is, and he's acting like he is, and that's incredible.
When Steve Cohen bought the team, we knew what was coming, mm-hmm. right? It was this dark, or for Mets fans, bright storm cloud yeah. of coins raining down from the sky. That was the expectation. It right. was sunny with a chance of contract extensions. However, for Seidler, we did not see this.
We didn't have a sense.
We yeah. had no idea because, right. you know, John Sherman, the propane king in Kansas City, he's bought the Royals and like he's maybe eventually going to invest more money into them when they're better, but he hasn't done that yet. New owners come in, they buy the team in smaller markets and they don't necessarily make this type of investment. So hats off to Seidler for that. One last thing on the relationship between Machado and the Padres. When he said he was going to opt out, it was an opportunity for other fan bases to like get horny, you know, to Photoshop Machado into other uniforms and to dream about a future that will never be. But Padres fans, based upon what we saw on the internet, never panicked.
Oh,
there
yeah.
was just cool, calm, collected.
Yes, which is, again, amazing. And we're still, even multiple years into this, just trying to grapple with this new Padres reality. But it's really fucking cool. And obviously everyone else is really jealous. But oh yeah, I mean, obviously after it took 30 seconds after the Correa thing fell apart for the Mets, where it was like, oh, it's fine, we'll just get Machado next year. You know, obviously the Yankees have been talking about Machado for years. I know the Cubs were, now that they start spending again, it's like, oh man, like he's our future third baseman. Like that's how this, whatever, that's how big market teams think. But also it's a reminder that the big market team is something of a myth. And if the owner wants to invest, the owner can invest. And Peter Seiler is doing that. And it is absolutely remarkable to watch. And while as much as I will continue to make fun of the, how is this sustainable? How is this whatever joke? Like, I think there's some mild, tiny truth to that where like, I am kind of like, this is an unbelievable amount to spend. And I know he's a billionaire like most of the owners are, but it is pretty amazing. And I don't care. I certainly don't care how sustainable it is. And we'll talk about what Manfred said. This was before the Machado extension. Manfred had some quotes about you know, the Padres investing all this money, but I don't care. But I am also like, wow, this is pretty wild to watch in the way that for Steve Cohen, it's like, duh. Like, duh, it's literally like a fraction of a fraction of a fraction of his
right.
worth.
For Cohen, there's no end in sight. It's a cheat code on Roller Coaster Tycoon, right? Where there's unlimited money for what you're building
right.
in your roller coaster. For Seidler and the Padres, the difference is like, it's not, is it sustainable? Will it work? It's what's the limit?
Yeah.
Right. To me, that is what I'm interested in. Because every time they do another one of these, it's like, oh my God, where's it coming from? This has to be the last one. And then it's not.
Yeah.
And that leads us to a quick point I think we should touch on now, which is Juan Soto.
Yes.
Who is, it's just amazing. There's just another guy that they're going to have to pay, right?
Yeah.
Soto, it just, I mean,
it's the final boss of extensions, right? I mean, you do, or signings, I guess, in general, right? You obviously start with the Tatis extension, which was a huge commitment, and we see how that's gone so far, but I think still an amazing achievement and a huge amount of financial, you know, investment.
But at the same time, a layup for totally. Everyone involved.
Totally, totally. Certainly at the time, right? And hopefully still will be. And then Bogarts out of nowhere with no apparent need for Bogarts.
What is need?
And they did that. And then let's just give old man Yu Darvish $100 million while we're at it, right? Let's just do that too because we can because that just feels easy.
It's like, oh, my, I'm already at the bank.
Yeah.
And Siler's like I'm taking money out.
And so, but Machado was really, we'll get to Soto in a second. Machado was the most important one because he is the face of, even more than Tatis, is the face of this team and this transition from the most relevant team to the most relevant team. Like, or at least, you know, from 29th to 2nd or whatever you can argue. And so because of that, that was clearly the priority more than Soto. And as we say, of course, Soto is the final boss of extensions. Arguably is, ever. I mean, I guess Otani, but like.
Yeah, but Boris.
Exactly.
Being Soto's agent. And Boris has and a how, reputation and a track record for never agreeing to extensions.
Also, Soto, who is, I know he still has 2 years left.
He's going to hit free agency at 13. I think.
He'll be entering his
bar mitzvah age.
Oh my God, he'll be entering his age 27 season, 26 season. Christ, Soto will be entering his age 26 season. Yeah, and so now here's the thing. I would still bet heavily against, even though we just said, like, we keep saying, oh, what's the limit? How could they still spend more? I just don't think it's going to happen. I also would assume that they're going to at least take a breath here and kind of try. Now, it's possible Seidler's like, fuck it, I'll just keep going. You know, let's keep just putting as much money in front of these people as possible and have this unbelievable core of Bogart, Soto, Machado, Tatis for the next however many years. I mean, that sounds great. But even those three is about as good as it gets in baseball. So they have still Soto for 2 years. I don't think that like it's going to ruin the clubhouse if Soto hasn't extended, you know, like it's not going to really matter. So I'm sure they want to. I'm sure they will make an attempt. I would bet against it happening. And I hope that Padres fans are not going to get too upset if that ends up being the case. But point is, he's on your team this year. He's on your team next year. And this roster is just absolutely insane. And the fact that they have those three guys up for a long time, I'm a little pitching long-term is going to be something of a question, but I don't care.
Don't worry about tomorrow when you're celebrating today.
No, man. It is absolutely a remarkable achievement.
Let's talk about Manny Machado, the baseball player. And he has had a fascinating path to this point, you know, drafted third overall by the Baltimore Orioles, comes up with them. It is kind of inconceivable now from where we sit to think about how this guy was a Baltimore Oriole for 7 years. It just feels like a different universe, right?
I mean, yes, definitely, for a lot of reasons. But it is also just like the ultimate, you know, you just get drafted somewhere,
and then that's where you start.
That's where you are for 6 years until you are just one of the best players in the league, and then you get to go wherever you want.
And I think for early in his career, even in the middle of his career when he was traded to the Dodgers, Machado was elevated to villain number one in baseball, and part of that was his own doing. He did some dumb shit, and he said some dumb shit, and he rubbed a lot of people the wrong way for good reason. Threw a bat at Alberto Callaspo, and he stepped on every Brewer's leg during the 2018 NLCS. And like, he was being a schmuck,
yep.
Right? He was being a schmuck, and people who played with him then and play with him now would tell you as much, you know, the folks who have seen the development of Manny Machado. But it is important to understand that he still is some of that, the uber confident, screw you, I'm famous and rich and talented. He still is that, but that's part of what makes him so good. But he has matured to a point where in his own clubhouse, he is the guy. He is the leader of that team alongside Musgrove. They are the, you know,
sure,
the two-headed monster of it. But guys now look to Manny Machado. He has lived long enough to become the veteran, which makes me feel old, I have to say. Makes me feel like a grandfather. But I think it is, you know, worth a kudos to Machado and the people around Machado because it could have gone sideways, right? Like he really could have alienated a lot more people if not for the people around him and if not for his own willingness to grow up a little bit. And when we see young players, right, and we're like, man, this guy's really got to grow up. We have it with Tatis right now, right? Growing up relatively, I'm not talking about his participation in the world. Okay. Like he's not working for, you know, the Peace Corps and marching in the streets or anything, but he is a better baseball person than he was at the beginning of his career.
I agree with that. And the other thing is with him is like, he was amazing with the Orioles, you know, made 4 All-Star teams and finished top 5 in MVP a couple times, was one of the best defenders, of course, in the league. But it's still, even though he was playing every day after once he came back from his major injuries, you know, putting up 30 doubles, 30 homers, it still felt like there was another gear. And that's the beauty of someone that debuts when they're a child, is that you can just keep projecting and keep projecting and keep projecting. And what we've seen over the last 3 years with him and the Padres is like, oh no, he's not one of the 20 best players. He's, you know, one of the 10. And that is a huge difference. And he has just been so ridiculously good and so ridiculously durable. And that's another thing that I think gives him additional street cred, I think, even among players that I'm sure have not liked playing against him or with him at times, is that the dude shows up and plays. And the fact that he just played 150 games. Now, we know that he also is playing through injuries a ton over the last few years. But he just played 150 games in 2022. And, you know, throughout 2021, when he played all 60, or 2020, I should say, I mean, that's the fewest games he's played since 2014, which is amazing.
And that was when he blew his leg out.
Exactly. And we just don't have that many examples of those players anymore that are both that good and that durable.
And
it's basically like him and Freddie Freeman. I mean, really, in terms of the very, very top.
And he gets some hate for dogging it sometimes.
Yeah.
But you know what dogging it does? Dogging it keeps you on the field. If you're not running into walls and hurting your hamstring, busting down the line on rollover ground balls, like you're going to have the ability to, 2015, 162, 2016, 157, 2017, 156, 2018, 162, 2019, 156, 2020, who cares?
All 60.
All 60. Yep. 2021, 153, and 2022, 150. He shows up every day. And like big leaguers care about this shit so much. They respect the heck out of guys who post. And that's the thing with Machado. Okay, so he's 52 career war through his age 29 season. That's 11 years in the big leagues. His first year was only 50 games, 51 games. So it's like 10 and a third years in the bigs. He's at 52 war. 283 home runs. Career batting average is .282, and he's only getting better. I mean, his best season ever was last year where he slashed .298, .366, .531. That's a .159 OPS plus.
Yeah, I mean, the offense has elevated in a ridiculously impressive way. I mean, yeah, what do you say? 52 war through his age 29 season. I can do a quick stat hut on that. Like, I mean, his defensive numbers, like he still looks the part. His defensive metrics have certainly gone down recently, but anyone that knows anything knows that's still one of the best, one of the best that we've seen. And yeah, I mean, 52 war through age 29 season is 33rd all time. And, you know, pretty much everyone ahead of him is a Hall of Famer.
Or did steroids.
Yeah, or did steroids. And so that's, you know, it's not exactly news that he's on Hall of Fame path, but now we know that will be in San Diego and San Diego only. Quick note before we talk about the kind of rest of the free agent hitter class is people dunking on Nolan Arenado. It's like, oh, dude, what the hell? Like, he's going to fire his agent. Listen, I mean, I agree. It is notable.
What's the context?
And unusual. Yes. So, of course, why would you say, oh, well, Nolan Arenado, what does he have to do with this?
Just catching strays.
So,
what about Brett Wallace?
So, Nolan Arenado could have been a free agent this past winter. But instead, at the end of the 2022 season, he decided to opt in.
2021 season.
End of the 2022 season. He would have been a free agent this past winter.
So, he opted in this past. Yeah. Yes, you're right.
Sorry. He just opted in. So, he opted into the remaining 5 years and $144 million on his deal with the Cardinals. Now, he was a year older than Machado would have been, you know, it's a very easy comparison to make, right? And so people were looking at both of these situations. Well, it's like we assume Arenado's going to opt out. Now, the other little difference is that Arenado would have been opting into this ridiculously loaded free agent class that we just witnessed. Now, of course, he still would have gotten paid somewhere. But he decided, you know what? 5 years, $140 million. I love where I am so much. I don't even want to deal with the headache of free agency. I don't even want to deal with the headache of restructuring my deal. 5 years, $144 million. Maybe at the end of that, I'm done. Maybe at the end of that, I extend more. I still play. I go somewhere else and I play the end of my career somewhere else, at somewhere, like whatever. He's like, I'm comfortable. This is fine. I very much doubt that his agent told him that was the obvious financial decision to make. But that, so that is why in some cases you can see, there are certainly cases where contracts are signed or extensions are signed where you can certainly question the agent, or you can question the decision.
Ozzie Albies.
Right. That is fair. This is not that. This is unusual for sure.
Yep.
It is certainly a case where he probably left money on the table, but I think Nolan Arenado is doing just fine.
And he's not represented by like rinky dink mom and pop agent shop. Like, he's represented by Wasserman, which is like one of the top five agencies in baseball. And
he
like
totally understood what he was doing.
Correct. Right. What you need to understand when it comes to the relationship between a player and an agent, okay? The agent's job is, we think it is, to make the player the most money possible. And usually that is the case. Mm-hmm. But what it actually is, it is the agent's job to make a decision that is in the best interests of the player based upon the desire or recommendation of the player.
Exactly.
And so what I would imagine happened in this situation would be whoever Nolan Arenado's agent is went to him and said, hey, if you opt out, chances are you can make X more than if you opted in. And he said, I don't really want to do that. I'm happy where I am. Please just, let's just opt in. And I don't think that Arenado deserves, you know, scorn or tomatoes tossed at him for that. That's his call. Would Jordan be happy living in St. Louis for the next 5 years? Probably not. But Nolan Arenado
would for $144 million.
You would?
That sounds good to me. But yes.
Would you rather be in San Diego for $350 or?
Well, when you put it that way, yeah. But so that's the thing. Listen, I know people are like, oh, Cardinals, how are they doing this? This is nonsense. It's like, dude, Braves. Why are we mad at the Cardinals? But yes, so that is unfair, I think, scoring towards that. So I just want to mention that. But I will say there's the one last piece of this before we take a break.
Yo, dude, Arenado was so good last year.
I know.
It was his best year.
That's the thing. Like, that's the part. Again, damn. And I don't want to get too, of course he could have made more. I mean, he would have been more crowded. There were a lot of, it would have been fascinating,
honestly. But he would have just gotten something near what Bogaerts got, maybe fewer years.
Yes. And the question there is, would the Cardinals have done that? Because clearly that's where he wanted to be, right? Clearly he wants to be on the Cardinals. And so for him, it's like, am I going to risk going to free agency and having some other random team that I know jack shit about and don't necessarily want to play for offer me 40% more than the Cardinals are willing to?
Chris Bryant.
And then to end up going back to the Cardinals in some weird, like he was like, no, I have this guarantee. I can just collect yes to $144 million in a place where I'm happy to be. It is not complicated. I don't have to think
about
this.
He's going
to
be fine.
And I can just enjoy my offseason. I don't have to think about it. Like, that makes sense to me. It's not crazy.
Okay. Both make sense.
Anyway, okay, enough about Arenado. The last part about this we have to talk about. There's a bigger, like, once the season starts, once we preview the season, we'll talk about just, like, the Padres and their roster because it's ridiculous. And there's a lot of questions with it that I'm very interested in. But let's look ahead quickly to next free agent class, because I wrote a little bit about this at Fox a few weeks ago after the Devers extension. Part of the reason why people extra expected Machado to opt out is that the free agent hitters in next winter are not great. And so that would seem that beyond Ohtani, obviously, Machado really would have stood to just cash in a insane degree. How much more would he have gotten than $11,350? Well, who knows? But the point is that he would have stood out. Now, let's talk about some of these players. And I'm just curious. Let's just run through. Again, we don't have to spend too much time on this. But
I just want to let you know my plan for next winter is that on November 1st, I will be moving to Fiji.
Okay.
And I will be leaving my cell phone in America.
You better hope Ohtani's plan is the same thing.
So, I was going to tell you, if you could just have like a telegram sent to me when Ohtani signs,
all right,
that would be great.
Fiji. Interesting Fiji. Choice. How many people in Fiji know who Shohei Ohtani is?
Way more than you think.
Okay. I don't know what I think. So
no, I know.
Way more than I think is, well, I don't know how much that is, but we'll have to ruminate on that one next November when there's nothing else to talk about because Harrison Bader is the best free agent batter available. That's a bit of an exaggeration. Let's just go through some of these names. I mean, I'm just gonna read you some names at the top of this list. Who stands out to you as someone who you could really imagine being the best non-Ohtani hitter?
Well, let's think about it within the $100 million range. Because I think that's like sure. The best way to think about like premier free agents, right?
Mm-hmm. I mean, yeah, if you think about it, this past offseason when the cash was flowing like crazy, how many guys got $100 million guaranteed? 10.
Nimmo?
Judge, Turner, Bogarts, Correa, DeGrom, Swanson, Rodon, Nimmo, Diaz. So that's Judge, Turner, Bogarts, Correa, Swanson, Nimmo. So six hitters got over $100 million this past offseason.
Well, I think the over-under for next offseason is 1.5.
Is 1.5, not counting Ohtani.
Not counting Ohtani.
Okay, so candidates to make $100 million next offseason include, and I wrote about this for Fox, I tiered them or whatever, so I'm going to read them in not the order that I gave them.
I think the over-under is 0.5. Okay. Changed my mind.
Okay, before you, because you know some of the names I'm about to read. Ian Happ.
Love Ian Happ.
Teoscar Hernandez.
Not getting $100 million.
Harrison Bader.
Harrison Bader could get $100 million.
Okay.
Harrison Bader, if he
has
what
a
he
Nimmo
did,
season, I guess.
Well, no, but if what he did last postseason, like if
sure,
that's,
if he hits
if that's
40
real,
home runs, I mean, sure.
Yeah.
Matt Chapman.
No.
I think Matt Chapman is the safest bet by far to get $100 million. By far to get $100 million. Rhys Hoskins. I hope he gets $100 million. I hope he gets 5,000 billion, jillion dollars because he's so nice and we like him.
Yeah.
Congrats on the $100 million, dude.
That's why teams give guys $100 million, right? Because we like
they're
it.
They're so nice. Ahmed Rosario.
That one, I think, is a yes.
I don't think it's a yes, but I think it's sneaky. He's that one sneaky is basically, good. He will be only 28, shortstop, good shortstop, and there's no other shortstops. So I don't know who's going to be thirsty for a shortstop next winter, but there's usually someone, and he could cash in like he's basically just like a way worse version of Dansby.
Well, that's what I was going to say. He's Dansby without the power.
Yes, but you know, higher batting average, and I mean, he's not nearly as good of a defender. Like way worse Dansby. Anyway, whatever. The point is he'll be 28, and who knows?
I want Dansby Swanson. We have Ahmed Rosario at home.
Jesse Winker, Joey Gallo, Cody Bellinger. All of them could be freaking terrible. All of them could just be all-stars this year.
Is there a world in which any of them could get $100 million next year? I don't... I think Bellinger's the only one, right? I think Bellinger could, but I don't think there's a world...
Where the other ones do.
Where the other ones do.
Yeah, I think Bellinger... I mean, it's...
Like
what's
Gallo,
more likely, Bader or Bellinger?
Bader. Joey Gallo could hit 75 home runs this year. And he would not get $100 million.
I don't agree with that. But
you think if Joey Gallo hits 75 home runs this year, he would get $100 million?
I do.
Okay.
You're going to listen back to that?
Let's bet on that.
All right, we're betting. If Joey Gallo hits 75, he gets $100 million. You're going to listen back to that. He'd probably get $100 million if he gets 75 home runs.
I don't know. He's going to be like a three-war player. It's 75 home runs.
75 home runs in Minnesota would be really impressive.
It's like a 288 OPS plus.
And then, you know, there's guys that can opt out.
Oh, you're done?
No, that's pretty much it. I mean, Lourdes Gurriel. Oh, well, there's one more wild card, which I'll mention. But, you know, Lourdes Gurriel Jr., you know, Jock Peterson, and none of these guys. Hunter Renfro, not happening. The one wild card is Jung-Hoo Lee, the Korean outfielder, who I think will be only 27 and has been, you know, touted as one of the better international hitters we've had in some time. Now, I mean, Ha-Sung Kim didn't get anywhere close to $100 million. Jung-Hoo Lee, I think, is a lot better than him. But that still smells like not 100. I mean, maybe if someone signed him to a really, really long deal, you get there. But I would be very surprised.
And the two big guns from Japan, Sasaki and Murakami, will not be coming over next offseason.
Correct. And Sasaki's a pitcher. But yes, Murakami correct. Is not for. Well, yeah, I mean, there's pitchers that will definitely get $100 million. But we're just focusing on the hitters here, and that is what we're working with. So, but all those guys will be in a. I mean, if they have big years, man, they'll be in good position to cash in.
Absolutely. And I won't know about it because I will be in Fiji. I'm Jake Mintz. That's Jordan Schusterman. We are going to be right back here on Baseball Barbacast.
Negro Leagues Baseball Museum President Bob Kendrick hosts the SiriusXM original podcast, Black Diamonds.
The Negro Leagues didn't care what color you were, and they didn't care what gender you were. Can you play?
Hear stories of the leagues and legends that shaped sport, culture, and society.
That's why the museum is so important. It's like, we are never going to forget you.
Episodes of the award-winning Black Diamonds are now available wherever you get your podcasts.
We're not talking about balls and strikes. We're talking about your life.
And we're back here on Baseball Barbacast. Jake Mintz, Jordan Schusterman. It is 12:41 a.m. and it's time to talk about the pitch clock.
Yes. Yes, we need to go to the airport in 5 hours. But hey, the clock is ticking. We better deliver this pitch.
Much like Major League Baseball, I'm going to set my alarm.
Jake, are you alert to your co-host with 8 seconds remaining?
In this
segment? Yes, I don't know. What do you think? We first of all, let's just say, as we mentioned earlier, we did not watch much full Major League Baseball this weekend.
Oh my God, he admit it.
Yes. So that's right, right? That said, as we talked about in the past, you know, I hope you guys can trust us with our general judgments on the situation so far and how we're feeling about it.
To set the scene, Jordan is neutral pitch clock man.
Yes.
And
I'm neutral leaning pro.
Neutral leaning pro. I am like violent extremist pro pitch clock. Like I'm like a clock in every home, a clock in every pot. Okay. There should be clocks. In Little League,
more clocks.
There should be clocks everywhere.
Yes.
Okay. If you're even, there should be clocks on baseball cards. There should be clocks in MLB The Show. I just want a lot of clocks.
That's interesting. I think there technically are MLB clocks in MLB The Show. But anyway.
I love the pitch clock. I think it's great. And I have very little patience about players that complain.
Yes.
My general perspective is if you don't like it, sorry. There are some circumstances in which we need to, you need to make adjustments for the betterment of the entertainment value of the sport.
Totally.
Don't care. That being said, first couple days of spring training action have loosened my stance a little bit, I will admit. And it has loosened it because something that you said to me over the weekend, and it was that not only are the players getting used to this, but the umpires and the pitch clock operators are getting used to this. And there is not yet like a standard skill or operating procedure across these different stadiums for the pitch clock operators. And what that means, we saw a tweet from minor leaguer Ryan Fitzgerald, who was with the Red Sox and played in a big league spring training game and said that the clock felt faster. There are different times when the clock is being started and there are quick triggers, there are slow triggers. And so because of that, I am not going to throw my fist down on the table in disgust until at least opening day.
Yes. I think that's fair. And I think Ryan Fitzgerald's perspective is important. I mean, he played a whole lot of AAA baseball games last year, just like, you know, Ryan LaVarnway, who we had on. And I think that's the part that we maybe underestimated from the start of this. Is everyone was going to be a shit show. It's going to be a shit show. But like, it's not necessarily that everyone is mad about it. And I think the players so far, they've been commenting on it, but I haven't seen that many, this is the worst thing that's ever happened to me. It's some guys saying like, yeah, I felt rushed. Hitters, Kyle Tucker, saying like, oh man, like this is a big adjustment for the pitchers. Or sorry, this is a big advantage for the pitchers, you know? And some other guys, again, Fitzgerald, you mentioned some pitchers, obviously struggling to deal with it at first. But I think that especially these first even few weeks, you know, you think like, oh, it's just a few seconds. What's the difference? It's a huge difference. If you're these little differences between when the clock is starting and when it's not, like that's everything. That's the whole thing. And so if those are at all different were at all faster than, yeah, the guy who did play with this clock. And by the way, it's funny Fitzgerald says that, because if he's feeling it's fast, it's slower than what it was in AAA last year, right? LeVar May said that the numbers, the exact time that you need to be ready is, you have more time this year in the MLB this year than the AAA guys did last year. And so that tells me that there's a lot of moving parts here. The umpires are dealing with it for the first time. This is another element that I want to talk about in a second about the catchers, but there's just a lot of moving parts that we're all figuring it out together. And so any snap judgments on it are not worth it, except for one. All the games are shorter by 25 minutes immediately.
Right away.
And like, we knew that. That's literally the whole, it's not the point, but it is an obvious consequence that, as we've said already talking about this for the last 2 months, it's not about the time of game. It's about how the game feels. And I think so far from what we've seen for the people who are at spring training games, feels pretty quick. And that's not necessarily a bad thing.
It was always going to be messy at the beginning. Mm-hmm. Change is messy, mm-hmm. right? It takes time to make adjustments and to get comfortable. And I would be concerned if it had gone seamlessly, mm-hmm. right? If everyone was like,
creepy,
it'd be like, very what? Unsettling. And right. the fact that I think this has gone exactly to plan, exactly how MLB expected this would yeah. go the first couple days of spring yeah. training. And I don't think there's any reason for concern.
No. I think this is exactly how we want to figure it out. And like, but it's also, this is the other important part, you know, it's introducing things that we haven't necessarily thought about or that we hadn't talked about. So the biggest one, I mean, there were a bunch of instances, violations, whatever. We're not going to talk about all of them. But the one that certainly got the most attention on the first day was that there was indeed a clock off, as it is being deemed, in which not even because it was a tie. So, but who cares? That's the other funny part, is it's like, oh my God, this is how this game ends. It's like, trust me, everyone is thrilled that the spring training game is over.
I would like to just briefly dunk on friend of the show, Jeff Passan.
Oh,
if I may.
Oh, yes. Well, let me set it up while you, actually, I guess his tweet will kind of summarize what happened in the Braves Red Sox game.
Again, we like Jeff.
Yes, but the thing that we've told Jeff this to his face, so it's fine. But he definitely doesn't listen to the show. Every Jeff tweet is like the most important thing that's ever been written. it's like the tone. He tweets either with his thumbs or with on his keyboard, is just like every letter just fucking boom, hits
boom,
man.
Boom,
like he doesn't know how to talk any other way. Like that's actually not true. He talks like a normal person, but he doesn't know how to write any other way. So anyway, go ahead.
Bottom of the ninth, tie game, bases loaded, full count. There are periods in between all of those phrases, by the way. The dream scenario, and Cal Conley didn't get set in the batter's box with 8 seconds left on the pitch clock. Umpire calls an automatic strike. At bat over, inning over. This is the new reality. Dream scenario is the part of this that I can't stop laughing at. I understand what Jeff is saying here, being like, this is the dream scenario. Like, no one is dreaming of playing in spring training. Even Cal Conley.
I know. And so, but okay. So the first thing, hilarious. The second thing is, if you watch the clip, you know, there are going to be instances. We literally saw one in a college baseball game this past weekend. But there are instances where, yeah, guys are actually taking a long time to get in the box. And that's the whole point. We can't have that. But what this introduced, and I think Cal Conley talked about this after the game, is that Cal Conley, and you can kind of see it, is looking at the catcher who is not set. And the catcher, and we should have talked to Ryan LaMarca about this, that is a part of this that I am very curious how is going to be officiated, umpired, whatever.
How
do you feel about this?
Well, I asked a couple Yankees about this the other day when I was at camp down there. Asking, couldn't the catcher lollygag the bejeepers out of the throw back to the pitcher because the clock does not start until the pitcher catches the ball? Correct?
Right.
Correct. So if I'm the catcher, I receive a pitch. I'm trying to give my guy some more time. I could just sit there in the squat, in theory, and just be like, are you good? All right, here's the ball back. Clock starts and we go. However, the umpires, MLB has said that if catchers are being overt mm-hmm. and egregious with their delaying of the game, they will receive warnings and then automatic balls.
But I'm more focused on the fact that the umpire, and again, this is new for the umpires. There's a lot to keep track of for the umpires now, right? we think about them as focusing on the pitcher and the hitter. And if the one cue for the hitter is the catcher squatting, then if the catcher's not squatting, the hitter thinks, I'm cool. I don't have to be ready and set for the pitcher, because if the catcher's not ready for the pitch, then I certainly don't need to be ready for the pitch. And that's what it seemed to be, at least some element of what happened to Cal Conley here. Again, who fucking cares? It's first game of spring training. This is exactly how we figure all this shit out now.
This is something that no one ever could have possibly thought of, and a great example of, like, you need to change players' brainwaves over time, because they've been conditioned to act a certain way. And that's going to take years. It's going to take games. It's going to take repetitions, but we'll get to that point. And, like, I'm just happy that this happened right away in this type of spot, in this type of dream scenario where it got a lot of pub. And so, like, now I think players, because of how notable and public and viral of, like, a clip this is, 6.5 million views on this video, right. Players will see it and be like, I can't just look at the catcher.
Right. And so that's an interesting thing. There's going to be a lot of different little intricacies of the pitch clock that we are going to all figure out together, and everyone is going to be okay. So that is our pitch clock early reactions. Obviously, it will remain a topic throughout the remainder of spring training. We did want to hit on a couple other things spring training related. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, do you want to take a quick break?
Oh, okay. Let's take a quick break. We'll take a quick break and we'll be back with the end of our podcast.
And we're back here for the ninth inning, the bottom of it, of the Baseball Barbacast. Jake Mintz, Jordan Schusterman.
We got here so fast. Thanks, pitch clock.
You know, without the pitch clock, this could have been a 4-hour podcast. Let's talk about just a handful of...
I have to say one more thing about that?
Go ahead.
Again, we knew, if you literally followed any of this at all, we all knew the games would be shorter immediately. But every beat writer being like, Cardinals, Mets, 227. Like, you're like, holy shit, man. This is the craziest thing I've ever seen. It was so funny.
Way less divorce and amongst MLB beat writers now.
What a take. All right. Sorry. Let's move on.
Ollie Marmol versus CB Buckner. Now, people were consumed over the weekend by the Tommy Fury, Jake Paul showdown, the celebrity boxing match that Jordan clearly did not know about. It was, you know who Tommy Fury is?
No, I know who Jake Paul is.
You know who Tyson Fury is?
Oh, I guess I've heard that name. There's another Fury?
I think Tyson Fury is like the heavyweight champion of the world. He's like the big...
Oh, wow.
The white guy from, like, I think he's like from Liverpool, England, whatever. Okay.
His real name?
Tyson Fury, yeah.
That's good. I honestly, like, I can't blame him for punching people for a living.
It's in his name. His little brother, Tommy Fury, was on Love Island. I believe he finished second on Love Island, matched with Molly Mae Hague. They're now married and have a kid.
Oh boy,
but Jake's Tommy Fury in. Was a no like idea. An amateur semi-pro kind of boxer, and Jake Paul was like, you're not a real boxer, you're just a celebrity. Tommy Fury was like, okay, then let's fight. And Jake Paul was like, okay. And they fought today, and Tommy Fury beat Jake Paul because he's a boxer and Jake Paul is a douche.
That's great. Why are you bringing this up? Because
that was the biggest fight today. But it's not. It's Ollie Marmol versus CB Buckner, Jordan.
This was actually a story that stemmed back to last season. Ollie Marmol, of course, the manager of the St. Louis Cardinals. CB Buckner, we've had a lot of discussion of umpires. Many of the older umpires, long veteran umpires, like 10 of the crew chiefs, decided to retire this past offseason. But don't worry, some of our favorites are still hanging on, like Angel Hernandez and CB Buckner. Now, last year, during the game in August, Buckner and Marmol, this is from the ESPN story about this, Buckner and Marmol had a confrontation during a game after a disputed strike call to Cardinals third baseman Nolan Arenado. Buckner ejected Marmol, who emerged to argue, and as the two yelled at each other, Marmol, this is hilarious phrasing in this ESPN story, because I'm pretty sure this is not what exactly was said. In the story, it says, emerged to argue, and as the two yelled at each other, Marmol appeared to tell Buckner that his time in the sport was done. I'm pretty sure the reporting was that he basically just told him to retire. with a lot of curse words.
He's like, retire. He literally did retire, bitch.
Yes. And incredible. Buckner yelled back that Marmol, relatively new to his position as St. Louis manager, had just gotten to the big league. So he played the reverse Uno card on
You don't know anything, newbie.
Yeah. Like, I've been here for a bajillion years. Anyway.
And Marmol's so, like, that's the problem.
So that was right. So that was August. That was last August. So on Saturday, first game of spring, we're all in a good mood.
Yeah. Spring is a time of rebirth, optimism. Renewal.
You drafted optimism, yeah. Right?
I should have drafted forgiveness.
Well, maybe that was the issue, is that we didn't talk about forgiveness or not. Anyway, on Saturday, so Marmol goes to the home plate for the exchange of these spring training lineup cards.
There you go. I got this. And why are we not sending out like a bench coach to do that, by the way? Maybe he went because he wanted to apologize.
I think that's what happened. So tell us what happens next.
Goes to home plate to apologize, and Buckner... Oh, would not shake Marmol's hand.
Did he hit him with a too slow?
Hey, gotcha. Like he's a six-year-old. Hit him with the turkey.
Up awkward high, turtle. He gave him an awkward turtle.
Incredible. He did like the thing where you tickle the person's palm. You know what I mean? The other umpires, Ron Culpa, Angel Hernandez, and Carlos Torres, did shake Marmol's hand. According to Marmol, others apologized for Buckner's refusal. Did they do that like in the moment? Can you imagine like Marmol's like, good to see you. Buckner's like, no. And then he shakes the other guy's hand, and the other guy's like, sorry about this, douche.
But that's what I'm saying. Like, when was that apology?
Probably throughout the course of the game.
Yeah. Anyway, so that was apparently an awkward moment at home plate. And then after the game, Marmol said, I don't think he's good at his job. It just shows a lack of class as a man.
Boom.
MLB spokesperson, we are aware of Mr. Marmol's comments and the matter is under review.
Mr. Marmol.
Mr. Marmol, it's a legal matter, so I think they have to say that. This picture is
another
also
quote
incredible.
From Marmol here. Oh, yeah. Quote, it's not an olive branch. It's just respect. You can have disagreements. You still go to home plate. Anytime I get thrown out of a game, I will go to home plate the next day for that purpose. It's unfortunate. Zero class. So, like, I think that C.B. Buckner is being a baby. Because I understand he feels personally insulted by Ollie Marmol, right? And maybe Marmol crossed the line. In my experiences with Ollie Marmol, he is a pretty quiet, reserved,
oh yeah,
gentle, fierce, and serious guy.
Yes.
But he does seem like the type of person who his moral code would lead him to apologize. And I respect that he did that. And I think in this situation, it is C.B. Buckner's job to maintain a level of, or at least a veil of neutrality, right? Like, there are umpires who probably hate certain players and umpires who probably love certain players and managers. But it is their job to call the game objectively every time they're out there. And what now we don't have forever for the rest of C.B. Buckner's time is the idea that he is neutrally calling any Cardinals game in which Ollie Marmol is involved. And so I would imagine for this year, MLB is going to have to like make sure he's not on any
keep
of those
him
games,
off.
Right?
Yeah, I don't know.
This is weird.
It seems dicey.
Shake the guy's hand.
Yeah.
Maybe it was like a COVID thing.
Oh, that'd be... Can you imagine if C.B. Buckner comes out and he's like, look, man, I'm just trying to stay safe. That seems unlikely, but yeah, benefit of the doubt, sure. Very weird, very funny, and probably not something MLB wants to be dealing with. They're like, bro, we got enough complaints right now with the pitch clock. I don't want to be thinking about umpires. Like, that's the other thing, right? I mean, that is another part of this. You know, just coming back to the pitch clock, is we're going to have a lot of angry managers over pitch clock stuff this year. More than angry players. I mean, just as much as angry players. And I wouldn't be surprised if these two end up head-to-head at some point over Jake Woodford taking 2 seconds too long. Anyway, let's move on to our – I think we have one more topic. Two more topics.
I want to talk about the Marlins.
Story. Okay. Do this quickly because I really want to talk about our last topic. But you go ahead.
So over the offseason, the – Cy Young Award was presented to Sandy Alcantara, who was incredible in 2022 and won the Cy Young for the Miami Marlins. But the word valuable was misspelled on the plaque, and so they had to get him a new one. And it was re-presented to him yesterday at a spring training game.
Yeah, not quite as.
Kind of weird, right? It was a cool story about how he didn't know it was coming. Mm-hmm. They surprised him, and his brother was there, and his agent was there, and everyone clapped, and he had no idea. And they gave him the award before the spring training game. Okay. Kind of weird that they did it at a spring training game instead of doing it, you know, like you could do a whole day giving him the plaque at Marlins
Park. Would do it like the, I mean, I don't know if they are starting at home, but yeah, I feel like that's like a thing you do during the regular season. Yeah.
But I think I have an idea as to why they did it.
Okay. Tell me, because I have no idea.
Jordan, they were facing off against the St. Louis Cardinals in their spring training game. Well,
that's a Jupiter, tradition.
Jupiter tradition. And the thing about Sandy Alcantara is that he used to play for the St. Louis Cardinals. And the MLB.com article highlights this. The timing couldn't have been more perfect. In December 2017, the Cardinals dealt prospects Alcantara, Gallen, Magnus Sierra, and Daniel Castano to the Marlins for Marcell Ozuna. Alcantara's most memorable start last season came on June 29th in a complete game win in St. Louis when he convinced then-manager Don Mattingly to keep him in during a ninth-inning mound visit. What percentage of Sandy Alcantara getting this Cy Young Award during a spring training game had to do with just dunking on the Cardinals?
Again, this seems to be clearly a decision made from the top here. With Bruce Sherman and whatnot. So if this is like the one thing they want to flex, I'm sure the Cardinals are like, have at it. Like, you guys over there on the other side of the complex are not of our concern whatsoever. And so, you know, happy for Sandy. They sure could use Sandy, but I think they're going to be okay.
It's also great, like Skip Schumacher is in the photo clapping. He wasn't even there.
He was with the Cardinals. Wasn't he?
Yeah.
Or was so. He in 20 yeah. when that trade happened? Let's see. Skip Schumacher.
He was the bench coach for Ollie Marmol last year.
Right.
He was in He's charge when Marmol got tossed by Simi Buckner.
Right. So yes. So that is just absolutely hilarious. I guess that was like right in between 20 when the trade happened. It was a little bit different. But anyway, I like that is very funny.
Like GM John Mozeliak of the Cardinals is like very cool, very nice, very funny. You suck.
It's like good. It's your one good thing. All right. Let's move to our final topic of spring training. This is something that
it's the best.
I feel like we haven't talked about on a podcast before, which seems crazy, but it is definitely one of our favorite things. Now, we are certainly extra locked into this because we are now covering a lot of college baseball and are very into the college baseball world. One of the great traditions, which I believe returned this year for the first time since before COVID, was the basically annual spring training exhibition between the Northeastern University Huskies and your Boston Red Sox.
Not mine.
Now, this is something that has been replicated by a few other teams. I know the Detroit Tigers sometimes play against the University of Tampa. I believe on Monday, the Arizona Diamondbacks will be taking on the West Virginia Mountaineers.
A classic rivalry.
Which is bizarre. West Virginia just took a series on the road at Arizona in Tucson, and I guess is now going to swing on up to face the Diamondbacks. That one is funny to me just because from a scheduling standpoint, they just probably just blew it out against Arizona to win a very important series. And now, I mean, who the hell are they going to have pitching to the Diamondbacks tomorrow? I am not sure. Because normally Northeastern has this scheduled so that they have a lot of days before that, and then they're trying to stretch it out. Although, we'll get to Northeastern in a second here. So I just wanted to mention West Virginia because that one's funny. But let's talk about, before we get to the specifics of this game, let's talk about the concept as a whole. This is amazing.
It's amazing.
It's amazing because we don't, it's again, we kind of talk about, we're going to talk about a lot during the WBC about how there's not that many opportunities in baseball where the gap in talent is so giant. There's just not that many contexts where that is the case. Sure, you could say, oh my God, you know, the A's are terrible and the Astros are amazing. But when the A's and the Astros are playing, it's still a Major League Baseball game.
And the A's still win like 35 to 40% of the time.
Right. And so, but these games are a genuine experiment of baseball glory. And sure, it is an exhibition. And sure, it is February.
And sure, the kids at Northeastern are trying 150% and the Red Sox are trying at 50%. Right.
Yes.
But that, still.
That said,
shouts out to Northeastern for playing a ball game.
They sure did. This game, I would love to see the history of this matchup, because I cannot remember a game being this close between them. Final score, it was only a 7-inning game, but 5-3. All five of those runs coming, I think, before they got an out, or and certainly in the first inning. So the Red Sox scored 5 in the bottom of the first. We've seen this before, where whoever the first pitcher is for Northeastern just has no idea what to do. It's always the first pitcher, whoever's out there first. And poor James Quinlivan going out there, going double, single, wild pitch, walk, sack fly, walk, 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 you know. But hey, if I was fucking 20 years old trying to pitch to Rafael Devers, I'd be shitting my pants too.
Yeah, like, you don't see a lot of people who are... Oh, well, I don't know, Jordan.
Tell me about James Quinlivan.
Like, he is a computer science major.
Okay.
So that's something I want to emphasize here. It might be the first computer science major who's ever thrown a pitch to Rafael Devers. Okay? Like, this
making
kid,
history. Set making, it in the Hall of Fame.
He trailblazer.
Yeah, he only got one out, but still, what a hero.
Like, James Quinlivan is worried about, like, his math test in the morning. You know what I mean? Like, he has college kid worries.
Yeah, there were some really funny tweets about this.
Like, and he's got a face, Rafi Devers. It's incredible.
He,
like,
love
can't
this.
Find his, like, school ID. You know what I mean? Like, he can't. He's out of meal points. He's still going in ski gear.
So that's great. But hey, the only one, you know, 5-3, totally normal. But here's what I love about this. So Northeastern opened their season with a road series win at UNC Greensboro. They go down, again, just Friday, a couple days ago, lose to the Red Sox. And then the next day, they take a doubleheader against Indiana State. Now, it kind of makes sense. I mean, you're facing Indiana, respect to the Sycamores, but you're like, these guys stink. We just played the Red Sox. So I imagine, and then they swept them. They won an 11-inning game today on Sunday. So
it's like the equivalent of a bat weight.
It's just so funny seeing them. It literally makes me laugh every time just looking on the Northeastern baseball schedule on their website. And just goes, right. UNC Greensboro, all right, then we got the Red Sox, and then we got Indiana State, and then USF.
Well, it's also when you look at, like, where the games are. Right. It's like ESPN Plus, Flow Sports, NESN.
Well, and also, like, well, I mean, the joke we make every year is, you know, Northeastern's on the bubble, but I mean, how do you losing to the Red Sox affect your RPI? I don't know. I would assume that would help for like a major league team on the resume.
If Northeastern beat
that's a quality loss.
It's a good loss. If Northeastern beat the Red Sox like 58-0, would you be like, well,
that's a great question. I really wonder that. Anyway, I would love to dig in more on this series because this is certainly the headliner.
I have a little beef here with MLB.com in regards to this game. If you look at the highlights from this game, the only available highlights are Red Sox players doing well against literal children and absolutely nothing. There's no positive Northeastern highlights available that are clipped. You know, I want to watch, you know, the chemistry major dribble one through the hole. Okay, against Tanner Houck or whatever. All right. And the other thing to remember, like, Rafi Devers is barely older than these guys.
Oh my God. I mean, I remember doing that stat. Dude, it might still be true. Jesus. I would actually love to see that. If this is how many years in a row has Rafael Devers been younger on someone in the Northeastern when he's played them? Was a great question. You know what I also love? That this was Masataka Yoshida's first game in America.
He's like, this shit is easy. He's like, this is it.
He's like, what? This is what I came here to face, these fucking dweebs from what even conference are they in? They're in this colonial. I mean, like, anyway, so that just it just makes me laugh. But now I'll be locked in for this Mountaineers D-backs game. D-backs, by the way, this is actually relevant because you got West Virginia coming into this series off a big road series win at Arizona. Meanwhile, the Diamondbacks, I believe, have been the worst team in spring training thus far.
Oh, God. Low-hanging fruit.
They are a cool 0-3 with a negative 24 run differential. So hopefully they can get right against the Mountaineers because they're literal college kids. But we'll see.
We have any more of these? I don't think so. But what we do, what we are going to get some of, Jordan, is the WBC team scrimmaging against MLB spring training team.
Those will also be interesting. I imagine that will be starting probably at some point at the end of this week, next week.
It's like, here's Nicaragua against the Yankees.
So keep an eye on some of those coming up in the next few weeks. All right, we should probably end this podcast. This has been just a treat, very fun pod. Thank you to Chris Tyler for producing this in the morning.
Hi, Chris.
He's obviously not here right now. Thank you, Chris. Thank you to I guess D1 Baseball for helping us record these podcasts in the same place. But thank you to everyone who listened. We really enjoyed doing these. We have a lot of fun stuff planned coming up. A lot of things to announce in March. I think that's safe to say.
I agree.
So we're very excited about that. So thank you for the support. You can email us at baseballbarbercast@gmail.com.
Just quickly, Jordan, March 8th.
Yep.
Circle that on your calendars for a huge slate of WBC versus spring training action. There are 9, 10 games featuring, it's the entire Arizona and Florida sides are playing spring training games. So Braves again. Here, let's pick them right now.
I'm looking at it. Yeah.
Pick them right now. Okay.
Okay.
We can each, you want to draft like winners? That's probably not a way to do it.
No. Let's just pick winners right now. Okay. We'll just go back and just name all the matchups and then we'll say our winner.
Dominican Republic versus the Braves. I'll take the DR.
I'll take DR.
Cubs, Canada.
Ooh.
I'll take Canada.
Canada's sneaky, sneaky loaded.
I'll take Canada. Columbia against the Oakland Athletics. Ooh, that's a toss-up.
That is close.
Yeah. I'll take the A's, I think.
I'll take Columbia in that one.
Mexico against Cleveland.
That's going to depend on the pitching there, but I'll take Cleveland there.
As will I. Great Britain against the Brewers.
A classic rivalry. It goes through a lot of history there. A lot of beef. Hopefully it doesn't get too chippy. I love this next one. Great Britain Brewers. I will go Brewers.
Puerto Rico versus the Red Sox. What will Alex Cora do?
Oh, my God. That's amazing. I'll take Puerto Rico.
I'll take the Red Sox. Venezuela versus the Astros. Winner gets to keep Jose Altuve.
Oh my God, dude. Jose Altuve. Who could be the funniest Astros pitcher for Jose Altuve to take deep?
Would have been McCullers.
It would have been Lance, but he's not going to be there. So there's really nobody that else would be that funny. So
it'll be weird to watch him play against the Astros.
Yes. So I'll take Venezuela there.
Okay. I will take the world champion Houston Astros. I'll take Nicaragua over the Mets.
I will not.
Okay.
Two more.
Israel against the Marlins. This is so good.
Oh man. It's tough, man. I'll go Marlins there.
You'll go Marlins?
Yeah.
As will I. And then the US versus Giants, winner gets to keep Buster Posey.
Yeah, that's an interesting one. Oh man. Imagine this.
Mm-hmm.
Logan Webb.
Mm-hmm.
Throwing for the Giants. He spurned Team USA.
Oh. Revenge game. Team USA bludgeons Logan Webb. Revenge game. Oh.
You should be over here, Logan. All right. We're done. Thank you all for listening to Baseball Barbercast. We're going to go pack and go to sleep and go to the airport in 4 hours. And we'll be back later this week with another episode of Baseball Barbercast. Goodbye.
SiriusXM Podcasts.